Today's program has been brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit internationalculinarycenter.com.
I'm Grace Bonney of After the Jump, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hi, and welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb, coming to you live from Roberto's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Julia Tertian. I write about food, and my favorite part about what I do is finding out the stories and meeting the people behind great recipes, restaurants, and more. Every Wednesday, I get to have these conversations on air, bringing the pages of Cherry Bomb magazine to life by interviewing some of the most interesting women in the world of food. You can listen to the show live every Wednesday at 2 p.m. on heritageradionetwork.org or download it anytime on iTunes. Today, I'm delighted to have three wonderful women in the studio with me. Katie Sparks, the executive chef of Tavern on the Green, the newly opened iconic Central Park restaurant, and Elise Cornack and Anna Hieronymus, the couple behind Take Root, a tasting menu only restaurant in Carroll Gardens. I'm really excited to hear about how these women are running one of the largest restaurants. Tavern on the Green seats up to 700 people, if you count indoors and outdoors, and one of the smallest restaurants, Take Root, seats just 12. Well, it seems like today's show is all about contrast. I have a feeling these three women will have quite a bit in common. Katie, I would love to get started with you. I have a zillion questions about Tavern on the Green, but first I'd love to hear more about you. Where did you grow up?
Well, hi, Julia. Hi. Thanks. Thanks for having me. It's really great to be here. Exciting. I grew up in Vermont and grew up on a small sort of what I call gentleman's farm because we weren't making our living from it. But we had beef cattle and horses and chickens and all that sort of stuff. And my father was a college professor up there at Middlebury College, but was really passionate about learning the edible species that were on our 70 acres of land. So I grew up really doing a lot of hybrid things, from growing our own vegetables and, you know, fruit trees and raising our animals and then doing that sort of foraging thing. So that was in the, you know, late 60s, and that's what was normal for us. So I didn't know that that was going to become something like a movement. Sure. That it is now. It was just the way I was raised.
And that is just in your veins.
Yeah, yeah. It is in the DNA, and it's just how I've always cooked. And it's super exciting to be able to bring that kind of concept to one of the largest restaurants in the country, and to be buying from all these amazing vendors who are like-minded about great sourcing, sustainability, seasonality, you know, foods that haven't been adulterated by either, you know, processing or antibiotics or additional hormones. So it's a great stage for
Absolutely.
This movement that's
and these
so meaningful.
Kind of new trends are really old.
They're very old.
That are coming
They're very
back.
Old. And I think we're learning the wisdom to return to a way that doesn't deplete the earth that we kind of
Absolutely. That's amazing. That
partner
that
with.
Your upbringing.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Was anyone in your family into cooking?
Both of my parents were into cooking. I would say we're all into eating. And interestingly, I think I found cooking because as much as I love to cook and I love the craft of it, I love exploring the world through flavors, through the stories of people who make food. It just makes sense to me. So whenever I travel, we traveled a lot in Europe because my father was a language professor, and it just seemed like the organizing principle for everybody's day, no matter what background they had, was the meals that they had. So it just made... It just made a lot of sense. But I am the only professional cook, I think, in my lineage.
Mm. Well, maybe the start of
Yeah, could be.
A lot of our listeners ask about sort of getting your foot in the door. So before we get to Tavern on the Green, I'd love to know, did you have any sort of big aha moment about becoming a chef? And did that lead to any sort of big break moment?
The aha moment was dropping out of college and having really no skill set, being, you know, 19 years old and landing in a restaurant, the way most people with no skills can do when they're young. And what I liked about it so much was the camaraderie in the kitchen. It reminded me of my mother's kitchen, which was always the hearth center. You know, we'd sit around the table shucking peas and just talking, and whatever it was we were doing was always in the kitchen. So that felt comfortable and normal to me. And when I was looking for a new direction, because I clearly wasn't the scholar type, my brother and sister had that covered. They were going to Princeton, so I was done. You know,
it's good when someone else in the family
oh, completely. So I had to carve out something meaningful to me, and the opportunity to go visit Johnson & Wales, the culinary school in Providence, fell into my lap, and I went, and I really had no expectations, again, because no one in my family had been either in business nor in the cooking field. So I thought, well, this will be kind of a lark, just something to do while I'm figuring out my real life. And I found myself fascinated by kitchen culture on a professional level. I loved the rigor. I loved the brigade system. I loved the yes chefing, even all that stuff, because the formality of it resulted in something really tangible and wonderful.
Absolutely. Yeah, I always feel about cooking, whether you're cooking at home or in one of the biggest restaurants in New York. I mean, there's such a definitive, like, beginning, middle, end.
And yes, I know. I needed that shape.
Feels very satisfying. So I've done a little research. Okay. So I know that you've cooked at a lot of iconic New York restaurants. You were at the Quilted Giraffe. You were at Bobby Flay's Mesa Grill in Bolo. You were at Quilty's. And now you're at what's arguably maybe like the most quintessential New York restaurant, Tavern on the Green. So I would love to know how that came about. How did you end up at Tavern on the Green?
Randomly. I had been one of those cooks who never ate at Tavern on the Green because it had a reputation as being a event space, and, you know, I was never invited to go to an event, so I just thought of it as sort of not, it wasn't on my radar. But a college friend of mine, Jim Caola, reached out to me 3 years ago and said the city had put out a request for a proposal and that he wanted to respond, and would I be willing to, you know, work with him to develop the food piece, you know, the menu ideas and design the kitchen, et cetera, because it was a very intensive request for proposal. And I'm a consultant, so I thought, sure, I'll do this. It'll be, you know, another sort of consulting gig for me. And I've always loved Jim. You know, we've been friends for 25 years now. But I really didn't think we had a shot, to be honest with you. I really thought, you know, Jim's passionate and magical, but my God, you know, there's going to be some big players here. And there were, but the city saw something in our direction and our passion for the project that they liked, and they awarded us the contract. And then we had to figure out, okay, how do we do it now that we have, you know, absolutely, a 20-year concession contract?
Wow.
How do we actually get this thing done? And so the last 2.5 years of my life have been this incredible ride of figuring it out, how to bring the values I have around food to this enormous facility that's going to feed so many people a day. And
tell everyone how big it is. You can see how many people do you serve? What are the numbers?
Well, right now, and keep in mind, we've only been open for less than a month, but we're regularly doing 900 brunches and 600 dinners. And lunches are the last thing we rolled out. So those are gearing up, but we're around, you know, 300-400 lunches.
You must have so many eggs.
Oh my God.
I can't even wrap my head around.
It's amazing. The numbers are exciting, actually, in a way, because, you know, the eggs we're buying are local, free range. So we just want to keep adding to that economy.
That's amazing.
You know, so
that's amazing. There was an article that I thought was so fascinating in last October's New York Times Magazine, their food issue about the rebuilding and the remaking of Tavern on the Green. And the writer had gone with you and your partners to, I just remember looking the endless search for the fork,
right.
The amount of things you had to look through,
the fork as metaphor,
and the numbers that you are able to buy. And so when you decide where you're going to buy your eggs, that makes a big difference.
And I've partnered with some wonderful places. Mass Brothers provides all my chocolate for all my desserts, and LaBelle's on the Upper East Side. It's a 5-generation family-owned butcher who really deals with the best of the best, and we buy their natural prime All the fresh meat comes from Labelle's. Great. It's amazing. Yeah. So
it's a New York restaurant that's supporting New York businesses. That's amazing. How big is the kitchen? How many people are cooking in it?
Not enough. Not enough.
I feel like
the
that's
moment.
Probably the answer for every restaurant.
We're still recruiting, and the people I have been working, my God, so many insane hours, but with so much heart and soul, and it's been, in a way, I wouldn't have wanted it any other way, because we've gotten to know each other really deeply and profoundly through working so much together to make it happen. But in a perfect world, all told, the back of the house will be, 50, 60 in bodies.
Wow.
Yeah.
How would you describe your management style, being the executive chef?
I'm a kind of a hybrid between the old school and sort of more enlightened, inclusive management, I would say. I like to have meetings, but I like them to be functional and kind of come up with a game plan at the end of them. But I also give people, I ask them to own certain pieces of business. Like, for example, I've sort of a layer of younger sous chefs, and I'll just say, listen, tell me what you want to take on, whether it's dealing with the runners and making sure they have what they need and making that function. The runners are the people who are not waiters, but they run the food to the table and have to know the food deeply and spend most of their time in the kitchen. Whatever that might be, own it. And then tell me what you're doing, share with me your thinking, but then just be on it. And so I like to manage people that way, where I give them something and I follow up and expect results, but I also like to allow them their creative process to figure out the best systems.
That sounds great. I would happily work. Speaking of sort of bridging old school and new school, I'm so curious about your approach to creating your menu, because you're holding the reins to this very historic restaurant, but it's also brand new. You just went through this whole renovation, and you're feeding everyone from, uptown New York sort of foodies to out-of-town visitors. And do you take all of this into consideration? How do you make a menu for this big of a group?
That's a really great question, and I figured if I'm trying to please too many diverse constituents, I'll probably fail. Mm-hmm. So I'm just doing what I do, which is largely seasonal, local as a sort of foundation. And then I created a kitchen that has a lot of direct heat elements. So there's a plancha, there's the grills, and there's the hearth oven. So I organized the menu around the cooking medium.
Oh, that's so interesting.
And designed it to be quick. So on the plancha, we pick up cremini mushrooms that have red chili and basil and coriander seed and some Spanish blue cheese. That's super quick. That's a starter. We also pick up the quail. We do two quails over grits that have homemade chorizo, and the quail's the thin little bird, and it cooks quickly. Mm-hmm. On the grill, we do, a New York strip steak, prime. It's absolutely gorgeous. And we do that with patatas bravas, because I didn't want friolators on the line, because it's an open kitchen. So patatas bravas come off the griddle or the plancha, the same thing. And the oven, I open up, I do wood-roasted mussels with an almond garlic butter, and I do a baked pasta in there. So I don't do pizza. I mean, who would want to compete with Roberta's and Bushwick? But I do lots of baked things. I do a hake with local clams and a saffron ginger broth, and I just love that oven vessel to table thing.
Sure.
So I purchased some really great ovenware from it's called La Chamba. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
No, I haven't.
It's a black earthenware pottery from Colombia.
Oh, okay. I feel like I've seen that.
Yeah, you may have seen them around. Yeah. Whisk actually carries them. I think that's where I saw them the first time. So I'm into that aesthetic of immediacy, and that the speed is part of the driver there.
It's so interesting, because just as a customer, as a consumer, I mean, that everything you just described just sounds delicious. But to think about that you're designing this for efficiency and to get it from the kitchen to the table as quickly as possible, I mean, that's just, I think it's so fascinating. We're going to go into our, speaking of hot fire, our Cherry Bomb Rapid Fire Q&A, which are our 8 questions we ask every guest. So it's whatever is off the top of your head, no pressure.
Okay.
Okay, so number 1, sweet or salty?
Salty.
Me too. Number 2, what did you have for breakfast today?
I had an almond croissant from my local bakery and scrambled eggs.
That sounds delicious. What are you reading right now?
Nothing. It's the inside of my eyelids when I drop away.
If I were to look into your refrigerator right now, what might I be surprised to find?
Coconut water, which I'm experimenting with. I actually don't like it, but I figured I would try to make like a summer non-alcoholic cocktail with it. Mm. So it's sitting in there waiting for inspiration.
That sounds good. What is your go-to snack?
Mass Brothers chocolate. It's in my purse at all times.
Any specific flavor?
I like their almond a lot, and I also like their Maine sea salt. Mm. So I have either one of those or the cocoa nibs too. One of the three of them in my purse, literally, I can show you right now.
I might take you up on that during the break. What's your favorite time of the day?
My favorite time of the day is when I get home from feeling like I've done some good work, that brought some value to my workplace and the people I work with. And I connect with my boy, Luke, who's 14, and my partner, Tim. He doesn't like me to tell his age.
We'll leave that out. Where do you want to travel to next?
I want to go back to Paris, believe it or not. I mean, it sounds boring. I know I should say something more exotic, but I really haven't been to Paris since 1993. It's so embarrassing.
I don't think it's boring at all. Oh my God. It's beautiful. What, our last rapid fire question. What was your favorite meal when you were a kid?
Anything my mother made when she was in a place where, you know, sometimes your parents just cook. It's a function, you mm-hmm. know. But when she was cooking to explore the world, like when she was doing fondue in the 70s or when she was, my father bought the wok and we're doing, that to me was pure theater. You know, being in a small town in Vermont, we weren't worldly. So we were exploring the world that way. I love that. I love the first Cuisinarts. Mm-hmm. You know, I love, you know, all that stuff was super exciting.
Your world gets so much bigger.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's a great note to end on. Katie, thank you so much for being here. It's really incredible to hear about the mechanics behind such a
There's
major
There's lots more to tell
restaurant.
You.
I know. I really
Come on up.
So many more questions. I'm sure I'll see you there soon. Right. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back with Elise and Anna to hear about their restaurant, Take Root, an equally impressive place.
National Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
Hi, and welcome back to Radio Cherry Bomb. I'm your host, Julia Tertian. We were just speaking with Katie Sparks, the executive chef of Tavern on the Green. And now we're going to turn the microphones over to Elise and Anna, the couple behind Take Root, a tasting menu-only restaurant in Carroll Gardens, Brooklyn. Thank you guys so much for being here.
Thanks for having us.
I have to have a sort of geeky fan moment because I have been very excited to meet you since I saw you win Chopped. So I'm just going to plug that. Can you guys tell us a little bit about your backgrounds? Where are you both from?
I am originally from Baltimore, Maryland. Went to college at Hofstra in Long Island, and then soon after that moved to New York City, Manhattan, where Elise and I met.
I grew up just outside Boston, My family has a house in Nantucket, so I summered there. And I went to college, actually, at Bates in Maine for visual art, and then also moved to New York and met on.
And you guys are married.
We are married.
You run your business together. Mm-hmm. How did you decide you were going to do that together?
It kind of happened, kind of, really, and I know that sounds silly, but we wanted to see each other more. I was working 6 days a week and 16-hour days, as most chefs do, and we had just previously gotten engaged and wanted to move to Brooklyn and garden, and then from that kind of take root just became, and it was one thing after another, and before you know it, we were signing a lease on a restaurant establishment after Anna had no experience in the industry. So, hey.
I was about to ask, when you were working your sort of 16-hour day, and you were at the Spotted Pig?
I was at, right before we opened Take Root, I was a sous chef at Aquavit in Midtown.
Awesome. And Anna, you were not in the restaurant industry.
I was not. I'm a yoga teacher by training. I'm no longer teaching. But yeah, when Elise and I first
met.
I hope
things calm.
I do my best. But when we first met, I realized very quickly I would not see her unless we were doing something together. So.
What was the time frame and the process of getting the restaurant off the ground?
April of 2012, we signed the lease. We didn't actually open until the following January, February. It's a very old building, and it never had anything even remotely close to what we do in it. So we were starting from scratch, hit a lot of road bumps with electric and plumbing, as most people do when they're starting a food establishment. So it was about 10 months.
Mm-hmm. I was speaking to a chef once about the best thing to know if you open a restaurant is not how to cook, but it's about plumbing. It's
like exactly.
Plumbers could open restaurants.
Exactly.
They would do really well. How is it working together as a couple? Do you get asked that all the time?
Oh, we do get asked that from time to time. It's great. Working together is really great. I would definitely say that the positives way outweigh the negatives. We get to do something together that's extremely rewarding, and we get to have experiences together that a lot of couples don't get to have. It can be tough at times. It can be a bit stressful, but overall, I think it's really great. It's pretty lovely.
Do you guys have other employees?
We don't. It's just the two of us.
The two of you doing everything.
Single thing. It's funny because we have such a method to our madness that we always wonder, we're thinking about hiring somebody over the summer. And we're like, well, how would we tell them how to do everything? Because it's literally everything. We have our own way of doing it. Yeah. But one day.
And how... actually, I'll get back to that in a second. I want to know more about the name. Did that come from... Was it what you just described, moving to Brooklyn? You guys have a garden.
Yeah, essentially. I think we've found that our relationship together has been a series of moments where we've needed to allow ourselves to grow. And the allow is the key word there. Because, a lot of times you can kind of avoid self-growth, and where we've kind of feel like as a couple we've constantly hit these little blocks or little bumps in the road where we're like, okay, we need to just take root and stand still instead of constantly try to move from A to B and, mm-hmm. And so...
it's a great life approach.
Yeah, thanks.
When the restaurant opened, so right now, if I were to go to dinner tonight, for example, I would go at 8 o'clock. I would be standing at the door. Yeah. I would be there at 8 o'clock. You do one seating. Mm-hmm. It's 12 people, and you're doing. Anna, you were telling me earlier, it's sort of 5 courses, but it's really 10.
Yeah, it's about 10 composed plates.
And has that always been the case? The first day you opened the door, was that the structure?
Oh, God, no. I feel like, not to quote Carrie, actually, but I remember reading an interview that she and Rob had of how different a restaurant is from the first day it opens to the last. It's basically a 180. No, we had a la carte dinner and also brunch as well the first 6 months we were open. And then we were like, are we
it's
insane?
It's a little too much. So it's a little too much for two people.
Yeah. It's good to know your limits. Yeah. But you're also doing so much. And how in this meal... How would you describe your food? Can you tell me about some of the dishes you're doing right now that you're excited about?
Yeah, absolutely. I like to take, kind of humble ingredients and just introduce them to people in a way that they haven't seen. I always say that come spring and summer, every chef in the city who goes to Union Square Market is using the same ingredients, no matter how unique or foraged they are. They're all the same. You'll see, ramps and fiddleheads and chickweed, but it's kind of how do you present it to your diners that they haven't seen it that way before? So one of the dishes that I'm really excited about right now is a cured asparagus. So they're not being cooked, with heat. They're being cooked with citrus. And it's really cool because it's with a macadamia cold soup. And so it's really humble ingredients relatively cheap that are put in front of you in a way that you definitely haven't had.
So is that like an asparagus ceviche? Or
so, yeah, similar. The citrus really breaks it down and makes it really delicate, and the soup is also very delicate and cold. And they're just things that you'd be like, well, I'm eating like pureed macadamia with water and asparagus. Like, how is that going to be good? But it kind of surprises people. So,
Anna, are you involved in the kitchen at all?
No, I'm not. I mean, I Elise shares her menu planning with me, mm-hmm. and I will give my input. But no, I'm not. I'm in the kitchen during service, in and out. But no, Elise does it completely on her own.
And what are there any other dishes you're super excited about?
Yeah, I think it's kind of... go off of what Anna was just saying, she doesn't physically help in the kitchen, but her input is very valuable to me because, you know, a chef's mind works differently than a diner's. We're all, even when I dine out, I'm still working, I think, as a chef. And sometimes every once in a while, she's like, I wouldn't want to eat that, babe. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. So we'll be on the menu. So kind of another dish that we're really excited about is, I remember when Anna and I met, she hadn't really eaten, you know, a lot of squid or octopus. And we have a charred octopus going on with a smoked egg yolk and lentils that are, again, relatively simple ingredients that it's going to be really savory and really going to kind of hit people in the face
that
with flavor.
Sounds delicious. About speaking of your tasting menu, we were speaking very briefly earlier about an article that came out in this March in GQ that Alan Richman wrote. The title of the piece is called The Rise of Egotarian Cuisine. And it's about, I basically have two questions about it, mm-hmm. but a little history on the piece. It's this article that is talking about a lot of restaurants, sort of similar to your small restaurants that have become really popular over the last few years that do only tasting menus. And his argument, I circled one piece of it that I thought was pretty apropos. He said, the chef explains that his cooking has a story to tell and it's a romantic novel of self-love. So he's sort of talking about the fact that the style of cooking of these tasting menus are, he said they're self-indulgent more than they're inspired. So I have two questions. One is what you make of that and what mm-hmm. your feeling is of doing a tasting menu. The other that I think is really sort of fascinating is that he said in the article that he wanted his readers to know that it's an entirely male thing. And he said he found no exceptions. Not once have I seen a female chef prepare such food. So I'm going to give him your number. First of all. So I want to know first what you make of sort of this idea of tasting menus being sort of ego driven. And second, I have a few more questions about sort of women doing this. So
I think in terms of tasting menus in general, I think ego has such a negative connotation, but it does have a personal
Absolutely.
Aspect to it because the chef is basically saying, trust me, I'm going to take you from point A, i.e. your first bite, to point B, your last bite, and you're going to enjoy it. Well, no matter really how you look at things, eating is subjective. So nobody is really going to ever really enjoy every single bite as much as, you know, the next person. So I think as the chef, you have to put your stamp on it and yourself on it. But I think actually we take things literally almost the exact opposite way. Yeah, I'm putting my inspiration into the food, but I'm really thinking about the diner and what kind of experience they're going to have and from one dish to the next and how they're going to transition and what kind of experience they're going to have. And I think that's where our partnership comes in handy because chefs are very self-indulgent and they are very selfish and you kind of have to be in some way. But Anna really steps in every once in a while and says, you know, like, yeah, I know you're really psyched about that ingredient, but it's not delicious. So we're not going to do
it. Sort of that. I mean, I equate it to, I'm a writer, so I can only think of, I mean, I cook as well. So I feel like I understand what you're saying, but for me to translate it into writing terms, it's like, I think it's very easy to often fall in love with your own writing. And then it's like, but are you actually saying anything interesting or worthwhile?
Right.
And you know, it's that famous phrase of like, sometimes you have to kill your darlings. And
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Maybe
absolutely.
That ingredient that you're so psyched on, but like, does it taste good?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
So that's great that that comes through so much in your communication with each other. I want to know about, what you think about women doing these kinds of menus. If you think what you make of that sort of gender disparity that he's talking about. I know you were recently got a really nice piece written about you on Eater, an interview.
Oh, thanks.
And I know Dominique Crenn, who's a very influential chef, who I think plenty of people know about her, but not as many as I think should.
Yeah, absolutely.
She runs her own pretty amazing restaurant in San Francisco that's also an only tasting menu restaurant. And she had really great things to say about you and is really supportive of what you guys are doing. Do you think, I mean, so there's her, there's you, mm-hmm. so Alan Richmond needs to maybe a little bit
yeah, homework. Maybe.
Are there other female chefs that you're looking towards?
There. I mean, I'm always looking around to see what female chefs are up to. Actually, Ryan Sutton, I don't know if you've read it, we were honored enough to have him come in to take root last winter, and he wrote a really wonderful piece when he was writing for Bloomberg about the female chef tasting mm-hmm. menu in these places. So there's also Elizabeth in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And I think in terms of, I mean, without sounding like an angry lesbian, I think in general, women have a slightly more delicate touch when they approach life in general. And then also when it comes to kind of food and hospitality. It's not to say that male chefs or male servers don't have, you know, the ability to be hospitable. But I think in general, I mean, we treat the space like people are coming into our home. So when you're coming into a space that's owned and operated by two women, not only just two women who know each other, who love each other, and we've put everything we have into the space. So no matter how you cut it, you're going to get a certain personal, delicate experience. But in a place like what Dominic Crenn's doing or Elizabeth, where it's significantly, you know, more refined and I guess bigger. I'm certain that they have to kind of oversee a lot of different people and little different angles touching everything that they're doing. And but ultimately, it's still a woman who's vetoing all the decisions. And I feel like when it comes down to that, there's always going to be that angle that's going to be different than men in terms of ego that men kind of carry with them.
It's a lot of food for thought.
Yeah.
I feel like that article opens up so many questions. We are almost out of time, so I'm going to very quickly go into the Cherry Bomb Rapid Fire Q&A with you guys, which are 8 very simple questions, cool. And it's just whatever's off the top of your head, and I'll let you guys answer them each before I move on. So, Anna, do you want to start?
Sure.
Okay, Anna, sweet or salty?
Salty.
Elise?
Salty.
So you guys aren't meant to be. Okay. Well, what did you have for breakfast today? This might be the same answer or it might not be.
Oh, I actually don't even eat breakfast, but today I did have a granola bar. So that's weird.
Mm-hmm. I had avocado toast.
Delicious.
Classic.
What are you reading right now?
I just got a new Ruth Reichel book. Delicious. Yes. But I haven't cracked it open yet. So I'm excited about it.
It's very fun.
Cool.
It's a bit embarrassing, but I'm not reading anything serious right now. Okay. I do flip through my fair share of quarterly magazines. That's what I enjoy
that
looking
counts,
at, such
totally
as Cherry
counts.
Bomb.
If I were to look into your refrigerator right now, your refrigerator at home, what might I be surprised to find?
A lot of quart containers from the restaurant. you might be surprised to find like a lot of blueberries and strawberries, totally out of season berries that we've been really into eating the past mm-hmm. couple weeks. So.
Berries with cream.
Yeah.
It's a big dessert for us.
That sounds good. What's your go-to snack? Is it that or that's a
cheese?
Dessert? Cheese.
String cheese.
Your favorite? I love string cheese. Yeah, no judgment. Favorite time of day?
Night.
I would have to say night.
And where do you guys want to travel to next or separately?
Ooh, I'd like to go to Bali, but I don't... Greece?
I would love to go to Greece, but I don't really think we'll be doing that anytime soon. I would love to go to Paris with you and just eat, basically.
That sounds great. What was your favorite meal when you were a kid?
Linguine with clams, definitely.
Mm. Oh, I would say on the same token, spaghetti.
Yeah.
Spaghetti with marinara.
I feel like that's kind of the mm-hmm. the recurring
comfort
answer.
Food.
Thank you guys so much for being here
Thanks
today.
Thanks for having
Thank
us.
You so
where
much for
can people
us.
Find you online? And where
so
is your restaurant?
Our Instagram and our Twitter are the same. It's Take Root, BKLYN. Okay. And our website is take-root.com. And all the information and
awesome.
Reservations is
cool.
there.
Cool. All right. Thank you guys so much. And thanks, everyone, for listening. Tune in next Wednesday for another episode of Radio Cherry Bomb.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.